This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
Let's get real. We've spent nearly 3 years analyzing the case against Brian Koberger, breaking down the evidence, the courtroom strategies, a psychological profile, and every bizarre detail from the affidavit to the alibi that wasn't. And now we're staring down the final stretch. No trial, no cross-examination, no moment of reckoning in a jury. Just a courtroom plea and a sentencing date. If you think this plea means the story is over, you haven't been paying attention. Because what we're looking at now isn't just a legal end, it's the opening chapter of how Brian Koberger will be remembered, studied, and yes, possibly mythologized. And that's where things start to feel slippery. This is the part where it stops being about, did he do it? It becomes a question of why. Why did he want this outcome? Why did the state agree to it? And why does it feel like, despite the life sentence, he got exactly what he wanted? I'm curious to get your thoughts as we go through this in the comments section on YouTube. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi if you're not already there. If you're on the podcast platform, hit subscribe, please. But do check us out on YouTube as well. Today, I'm joined again by defense attorney and former defense attorney Bob Mata, who doesn't mince words and doesn't sugarcoat it. We're going to dive deep into the state's motivation for possibly wanting to avoid this trial altogether, not because the evidence wasn't strong, but because the fallout, the appellate future, the emotional and political cost of dragging this through the courtroom for months might have been too high for a small-town DA's office to bear. And yeah, we go there. We talk about Koberger's likely mindset in taking that deal, the disturbing possibility that a lifetime behind bars wasn't a punishment, but a goal, and how that puts him in the same macabre lineage as Bundy, Kemper, Gacy, and yes, BTK. We also confront the harsh reality that while this case is technically closed, the families, especially Steve Gonsalves, are left asking why no one sat down with them and explained this face-to-face. Because justice delivered through a PDF isn't justice, it's bureaucracy wearing a mask. So let's jump into it right at the moment when I ask Bob the question that is still bugging me. Did the state ever really want this case to go to trial? Do you think the state wanted to deal with this case from the beginning? I mean, that's kind of something I look back on this a little bit. I know some others have as well. I mean, they tore the house down. The DA is the DA. The police, I think, did a great job on this. As much as we were criticizing them at the very beginning, like, what the hell's going on here? They had their stuff together behind the scenes.
Yeah.
The DA's office seems to be a little more questionable on how all this was handled behind the scenes. Do you think they really wanted this? Or were they really kind of hoping all along that, you know, maybe we can get a plea, get this done with, and wash our hands of this horrible, horrible thing that's in front of us?
I think that's true of any prosecution team. I mean, you're talking about you've got number one. Remember, that's a political office.
Yeah.
That's how. And I thought Hippler did a fabulous job of kind of giving people a civics lesson.
Yeah.
At the beginning of that plea hearing yesterday, like our followers, and we had a lot in chat yesterday as we were streaming that live. They were like, "Oh, get to it." I'm like, "This is where I want you to listen."
Yeah.
Because this judge is explaining how the process works. Because I say it all the time and it comes off as cold, but the reality is emotion has no place in the law.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what this process is about. Of course, that doesn't mean that you're not empathetic, but in terms of the process in and of itself, there is no room for emotion in there. It's a cold place.
Yeah.
And you've got to deal with the facts and the evidence. And you've got to deal with everything else that comes with that. And we're talking about Latah County, Idaho. We're talking about a town that has a university that is the heartbeat of that town. So, yeah, man, there's a huge part of that is taken into consideration. Do you think that the University of Idaho wanted that fucking trial going on, man, for 3 months while their kids are in class. You know what I'm saying? No. It's like the thing was starting August 18th, matriculated, like the kids are coming back.
Yeah.
You think, even though it's an ADA, even though they moved it, you know, it's like, it's still, it just, it's one of those cases that would haunt them forever.
And that's the thing, even if they had gone on with trial and let's say he was found guilty, you're exactly right. The appellate issues would have gone on forever, probably till Steve dies, you know, and Koberger's still alive just because of the age difference there.
Yep.
I agree. It's like big picture, right thing was done. Emotions, yep. All of it on the surface, 1,000% understand Steve and agree with him at this moment in time, but
100%.
Bigger, calmer, rational thinking. Yeah.
And I hope Steve gets there. I do.
Too,
he deserves that.
Oh,
he deserves a modicum of peace. Because look, the reality of these cases, man, is that nothing is bringing the loved ones back in these cases. Nothing. It doesn't exist. The best that we can do is to punish those that commit the crimes. And, you know, I saw a lot of tweets out there like justice was not done. Well, it was. It was done, you know, and that's like when you strip away the differentiation between an eye for an eye and what justice is, you know, and I've said it a million times. I mean, to me, there is no worse punishment than spending your life in a box. I don't give a shit. Like 60 years in a box, Tony, that's some real shit. Like, I don't care if they get to eat 3 meals a day. They have to keep them alive in order to continue to punish them. I don't care if they get to watch a TV for a couple hours. Like, they never get to do all the things that we take for granted in our lives and our daily lives ever again. It to me is the most, I would rather die than 60 years in a box.
And I agree with that on most, for us, 1,000%. I could not do it. But to someone like a Koberger, I almost feel like there's a Hannibal Lecter aspect to this where he's kind of enjoying it, where there's some pleasure in what should be punishment, because now he's going to be studied for the rest of his life. Ramsland already said the other night with Brian, like, I'd be interested in studying him if he'd have me. And it would be a very interesting study, without a doubt. But again, it's like giving in and giving him what he wants at the same point of being infamous. He's now there. He's there with Bundy. He's there with Kemper. He's there with everybody.
Gacy.
Exactly. In the infamy line of serial killers. He is there. And I think I don't know that the box phases him all that much, to be completely honest, most.
You can't compare for Koberger comparing during the process.
Yeah.
Where he's still
true
in the limelight, to the reality.
Yeah. I hear
that
you.
Prison door fucking hits shut for the last time.
Yeah.
There's a finality to it that changes that mindset. And it's funny you said that. If you were to go back and listen to my initial coverage of Brian Koberger in that case, I said the exact same thing that you just said.
Yeah.
I was of the mindset that I thought that he was desirous of all the things that you just said so much that I was refusing to say his name.
Yeah.
I would not name him.
I remember that.
A year.
Yeah.
And then finally, once the case kind of like got legs, I'm like, you know what? There's no point. Like, people are not going to know who I'm talking about.
So like,
I agree, man. I think there is an element to this guy that is your spot on, man. Like, this guy, but here's the thing is that if you look at a vast majority of these guys with Ed Kemper, and Fish being, which was in the early 1900s, they're just not honest with any of the people that are studying them. Like Ramsland's wonderful. I love what she tries to do.
Yeah.
But if you've got people that are just not being honest about a situation, or the other part of it is, you know, this guy's fucking broken mentally.
Yeah.
He is not a normal person. He is not you and I. He is not.
Yeah.
People don't understand how you can do this. And I'm like, okay, well, It's because we don't understand how the human mind works
yeah.
at all. We have very little knowledge about how the brain actually works and functions. And in this type of situation, you're trying to get answers from somebody who doesn't know the answers himself as to why he's broken. He has no fucking idea why his mind is like the way it is.
Yeah.
Like, to be compelled, because you going into this, you have to imagine how obsessive he was, how obsessively he was thinking about doing this.
Sure.
For months, maybe years.
Yeah.
That it was at the forefront of his mind that he had this compulsion to do this thing that we will never understand. And if he can't understand why he's that way, no one else is going to be he's not going to be able to give honest answers. You know, did he ever battle like in part of the Gacy tapes when my father was preparing him for his insanity defense case, you know, there were glimmers of truth in there, mm-hmm. you know, and like towards the end when Gacy got really sloppy with Rob Peast and kind of broke his typical MO and, you know, just snatched this kid where it was clear that they were going to put together that Gacy was the last person that saw him. And, you know, that ended his reign of terror. And, you know, when he talked about it, he was like, at that point in his evil career of killing, you know, he had realized that he couldn't stop himself. And, you know, he was like exhausted because that guy would literally work all day as a contractor. And then like his kill time was like 4 a.m., 5 a.m. in the morning after he'd work all day and then go troll for victims. And then bring him back and do whatever he did. And then he'd get up at 7. The guy would sleep like an hour and he did it for years. And, you know, but he finally realized that, you know, he was trying to work more in the hopes that he'd sleep so that he wouldn't do what he was doing. Like there was a part of it and it wasn't remorse.
Yeah.
It was like exhaustion for him. Like it's just that their minds are so cracked and fractured and broken in a way that us as normal human beings, and we all have fucked up heads one way or another. We all deal with our own shit, but this is a completely different thing. You can't really even categorize what they are. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of how their mind works, because we just can't contemplate it. We just don't understand it. We don't, is it, you know, a synaptic thing where things aren't firing, or have they reached some other part of the brain that most of us just don't access? Is it nature versus nurture? Is it both?
Usually a little bit of everything. And that's what makes them all a little bit something. This conversation left you feeling unsettled. Good. Because the truth is, the Koberger plea isn't justice wrapped in a neat bow. It's more like a tourniquet, stopping the bleeding without really healing the wound. Bob laid out what many legal experts have been quietly saying for months. The prosecution may have had the evidence, but not necessarily the stomach or the resources for the war that was coming. A trial this big, this high profile, in a small jurisdiction like Latah County. I know it was moved to Boise. It was always going to be a logistical and emotional bloodbath. And the moment the University of Idaho students returned for the fall semester, that pressure wasn't just legal. It was political, economic, and institutional. Nobody wanted this trial hanging over the town like a fog of death for 3 more months or 3 more years on appeal. But while the state might have avoided chaos, Brian Koberger still walks away with the slickest possible consolidation prize, and it's not Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. Oh, maybe it should be, laced with cyanide. Here, have some rice, Brian. It's delicious. No, he walked away with control. The control to avoid death. The control to keep his secrets. The control to become the subject of a study, not just the subject of a courtroom. Infamy instead of anonymity. And make no mistake, he knows exactly what lane he's in now. It's the Bundy, Kemper, BTK lane. That lonely corridor where men like this get to live on in interviews, books, and documentaries, while the victims' families get to relive their worst days forever. And Bob's absolutely right. You can study these people all you want, but most of them won't ever give you real answers. Not because they're hiding something, but because they're genuinely don't know. You can't pull logic from a fractured mind. You can't humanize a brain that doesn't function the way ours does. And yet we try, because the alternative is to admit that evil sometimes just is. And that's a little too bleak for most people to sit with for long. So what now? Well, Koberger will be sentenced, the families will speak, and if we're lucky, he won't. Whether he's silent or not, we'll still be talking about this for years, because this case didn't just change lives, it changed how we think about justice, punishment, and the uncomfortable gray area where someone can admit to four murders and still walk away with exactly what he wanted. We'll keep unpacking it. Keep asking questions. Because someone has to. Tell me in the comment sections what your thoughts are on this case. I want to hear it. On YouTube, search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski to get in on that. Press subscribe if you're listening on the podcast platforms. We do greatly appreciate your support and your listening and watching of the program. Until next time, I'm Tony Brewski. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving non-stop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.